You're tuned in to the Vintage House Show, home to the original stories of the history of house music as told by the legends, pioneers, and icons. Hosted by Kevin Mega McFall, Lori Branch, and Lauren Lowry.
Listening and watching, we're here with Julius the Mad Thinker. This is the Vintage House Show, part of Street Beat with WNUR 89.3, Evanston, Chicago, HD1, and FM. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for coming down here. We're far north, and for those of you who are not in Chicago, what that means is it's quite a hike for people. Sometimes people have come as far as Indianapolis. Chris and her husband Hugo came all the way from Indianapolis. I felt compelled to put them in a hotel room. Yeah. I was just like, that's a long drive, so I really just appreciate you making the trek.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's great that you give me that story first, so I can't feel bad about coming someone just spent like 4 hours coming, and yes. You're just like,
yes.
I mean, it's hop, skip, and a jump, as we would say in the suburbs back in the day.
Yes. So the purpose of our show is, you know, we like to, especially now, which we are celebrating 40 years of house music. We're going to get into 40 years of house music because I want to talk a lot about that. But really is to collect stories. You know, there are many stories about this thing we call house music, which sort of grew out of disco and punk and rock and sort of the late 70s, early 80s movement. Many of those same kids, like me, you know, who were part of that, sort of merged into this new era of sound that became worldwide. So we talk to folks to hear their stories about sort of when and where they entered. And I know you are from Chicago, suburbs.
Suburbs, not, yeah.
Elgin. Which, Elgin. Mm-hmm. So Elgin is on the north side of
northwest. Straight west. Straight 90 west.
90 west. Yeah. Okay, so is that, for folks who are listening, is that like, how far from the O'Hare Airport is that?
About 25 minutes.
Okay, so it's not that close.
it's 45 minutes to the city, I feel.
Yeah,
like
45 that's... minutes to the city. So you could live on the south side, it'd be the same thing.
Exactly.
What's up, Cuss? So that's great. I want to talk a little bit about sort of the when and where you entered. And just for our audience, Julius, do you prefer that I say Julius the Mad Thinker or Julius? Or do you have a, like, what is like, your wife call you? Never mind, we won't go there.
My wife, she calls me Julius.
Julius, okay.
Yeah, she calls me Julius, but I have a lot of nicknames. Yeah. Because, you know, I played baseball back in the day.
Okay. So when you kind of look like a baseball player. I could see that.
Yeah, so when you start playing sports, yeah. It's, yeah, the combination of that. So, in my, you know, my grandfather used to call me Choo Choo.
Choo Choo.
Yeah, Choo Choo. Okay. My other friends used to call me, or my aunt used to call me Juju.
Juju. I have a nephew, Juju.
Yeah?
Yeah. And his name is Julius.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I still got friends that call me Jules.
Okay.
My father-in-law, he calls me Julian.
Oh, Julian.
Julian.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
So, and then, you know, I got friends that they call me JTMT, other ones Thinker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you prefer?
You can call me Julius.
Julius. Okay, sure. So that's what we're going with today. But we will get into the Mad Thinker, because that is something that I'm sure everyone is intrigued about, sort of where did this name come from. Okay. Hey, Maurice Davis. Hey, Nida. Thanks for tuning in. When and where did we enter? So I want to talk a little bit about sort of Elgin, and growing up in Elgin is very different than most of the people who we have on the show. So Elgin is a northwest suburb within Chicago. Not very diverse, as I recall. Has it changed?
It's diverse. Pretty diverse.
Has it always been that way?
I mean, I only know my experience. Yes. My experience, I lived in a neighborhood where on one side, my neighbors, my direct neighbors were Indian.
Mm-hmm.
And then next to them, they were Japanese.
Okay.
And then the other side, it's American family. Then there was a German. And then there was a Russian.
Okay. That's pretty diverse.
Mexican. Like, literally, we had everybody in our neighborhood. Yeah,
that must have made for an interesting high school experience.
Yeah, so, but interesting, now going to grade school, junior high, and high school,
mm-hmm.
I guess I didn't really think about it too much because I made these, the kind of, so I lived in that, like, super diverse, middle class kind of neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Then my cousins lived in an all-Mexican and Puerto Rican neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And then my other cousins lived in an all-Black neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And as a kid, I used to make the rounds, right? So I didn't really think about that until, I guess, like grade school, maybe, and or junior high, probably more junior high. Okay. Junior high is when, you know, kids start getting a little bit, I'll say, kind of
they start
courageous and ignorant at the same time.
They start noticing each other in different kinds of ways.
Yes.
The right ones and the wrong ones.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, so it was pretty diverse.
That's good.
I felt it was pretty diverse.
So as a high schooler, when did you, let's talk about your experience with the music. And there's a few things I want to talk about with Julius, which is I want to talk about music, art, travel, dance. Okay? Because I think you have intersections in all of those areas that are very interesting. Mm-hmm. So Julius is a musician, a producer, a DJ. I was listening to some of your tracks on the way, just today, just to sort of familiarize myself with your library, which is much more extensive than I thought. You know, I was like, I know he's done a few tracks, but you've worked on a lot.
Yeah, it adds up over the years.
Oh, yeah.
It adds up.
So did you start as a DJ or a producer?
I started as a promoter.
Okay.
My job was to bring people together.
What year was that?
That would have been in 90.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to go back.
Mm-hmm.
So my story is more, I'll say, going to my cousin's when I was a kid.
Yes.
And I'd say maybe that was like fourth grade or something like that.
Okay.
We were pause mixing.
Oh, yeah.
Tapes.
I remember that.
Right? You know, say we'd have like three... boxes, as we used to call them, and we would just be pause mixing whatever we heard on the radio. Pause it, you know, three Buffalo Gals, you know, and it'd be like, you know, pause, play, three, you know, and
then
there'd always be somebody saying, shh, you know. So that happened, and then didn't really know what I was doing. We were just doing it, and then. When I was in sixth grade, there was a kid that moved in from Chicago to our sixth grade class, and he was kind of the kid who the teacher kind of made guessed that, like, if she could manage him, then she would be able to manage the entire class. Partly because
he was a leader.
He was a leader, and he was the baddest and the scariest of everybody, right?
All right, that was a smart teacher.
Yeah, and so she made a deal with him, and the deal was, I'll give you one wish, and if I give you that wish, then you have to make sure all the class does what I'm asking them to do.
Yes,
and he said, bet. That's what he said.
That's
and
good.
So what do you want? And so he said that what he wanted was every lunchtime that we don't have to go down to eat lunch with the rest of the kids in the cafeteria, that we could stay up in the room and eat lunch and listen to How Lunch Makes Us.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that was
how old were you?
That would have been in sixth grade.
In sixth grade. So what station were you listening to?
BMX.
So you listened to, like, the Hot Mix 5?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was, like, number two.
Was that the first time you had heard, like, Hot Lunch Mixes or mixing?
So I go back to doing the pause mixes and hearing that.
Yeah.
Whatever. I don't even remember what was going on, even what inspired us to be doing it. But that's what we were doing, right? So that was that first part.
Okay.
And then part two was in sixth grade, right? Yeah. So then started doing that, and of course, you know, maybe Parachute Pants, talent shows,
yes.
Michael Jackson, Prince, but everything was all jumbled into as just music, right? Still didn't put it all together. And then in high school, junior year, I remember walking past the auditorium, and there were two guys that were, they were practicing for the talent show for the school, and they were listening to these tracks, and they were dancing, they were moving in a certain way, had the shoes, a certain get up, and I just remember, I was just like, man, that just looks so dope, what is that, right? And so I went up to them, and I just asked them, I was like, hey, you know, what is this, what are you listening to?
Yeah.
And dude, I'll never forget his name. It's one of his last names, Orphy.
Okay.
And he was just like, oh, this, he's like, this is Gherkin Jerks.
Gherkin Jerks.
Gherkin Jerks.
Oh, my goodness.
I didn't know what Gherkin Jerks was. Uh-huh. All I knew, and actually, I remember, I learned later, and I remember, I'll never forget the way it's, the song, it was Tardisc. Mm-hmm. That was what he's listening to. I just asked him what it was. He said Gherkin Jerks. Years later, I found out that that was later heard. I didn't know that, right? But then that was number three.
Okay.
And so when that happened, very soon around that time, there was the first teen nightclub that also started. But even there's a little story behind that.
And was that teen nightclub in Elgin?
In Elgin called Discovery.
Okay. Yeah.
But the crazy part about that, right, was so that was my junior year. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, and I'm going back, so when I was 12 years old, I was like one of the best players of baseball and, you know, in my little league. 13 years old, I didn't make the All-Star team.
Okay.
14 years old, I hurt my arm and decided that maybe I'm going to play tennis instead of baseball. Mm-hmm. This is going to go somewhere, actually.
Listening. I'm on the edge of my seat here.
So go to my tennis camp the first day, and it's amazing. I learned so much, and I was really, really good at tennis. Mm-hmm. I was better at tennis than even baseball.
Okay.
Right? Come home, I tell my mom, I think I'm going to play tennis from this point on. She's like, really, dude, really? Are you serious? I'm like, yeah. So, super hyped to go the second day. Go the second day. The entire building, this multi-complex, has burned down to a crisp.
Oh, my God.
3 years later, that building turns into the first teen nightclub.
Wow. Okay.
So, it was the universe is... right, exactly.
It was conspiring for your DJ hood.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, it was junior year. Have the auditorium situation, teen nightclub opens up, and then I'm going to, you know, Discovery on a regular basis, and I just fell in love with this.
And so you were going to Discovery. This is a teen nightclub. Yeah. So how old did you have to be to get in there?
I don't know. Probably 14. So
it really was for like teenagers.
It was teenager. 14, probably 19 was like that range, maybe.
Okay, Discovery out in Elgin.
And
what kind of music were they playing?
Fast Eddie, everything. Yeah, I mean everything from Fast Eddie and whatever, Hot Mix 5 to R&B, slow dance cuts,
Michael
to
Jackson.
Whatever, everything. Yeah, yeah. All that. So then that happened. My mom thought it was the first time I ever stayed out till 3 o'clock in the morning.
They let you, they were open that late?
Well, it probably closed at...
You had other things to do.
Right, well, I think it was the early, the early understanding of what happens after the club's over.
Yeah.
Like going outside and just talking.
Yeah, you're hanging out.
Just hanging out, talking, and I just remember that was the very first time, and I got grounded, had to wash dishes for the entire summer. My mom was looking for me in
that's
bushes,
great.
You know.
That's
so
hilarious.
So that's what happened, junior year. And then from that point on, I kind of stuck with the music, and around probably a year, 2 years later, like after senior year, like maybe my first year of junior college or at the end of senior year, it was so boring in the suburbs, I bet my cousin that I could get 500 people to go to a party at my house. It wasn't about 500 people and having this raging party. It was about there had to be at least 500 people that were as bored as I was in a town of 70,000.
And could you get 500 people in your house?
I lived on a half acre. I lived on a half acre lot.
Okay.
So it was inside, outside.
You made it happen.
Made it happen.
Uh-huh.
And then for, you know, for folks who are tuned into house music right now and all the current producers, one of the DJs who played that very first party was DJ Immaculate.
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
We're high school friends.
I was going to ask you about that. I was like, there's this Immaculate connection.
Yeah. We went to high school. He's my sister's age.
Wow. That's how it works.
Uh-huh.
You know, so many crews come together because of high school.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of what happened. And, you know, I mean, you know, I guess if I go back, I always used to think about when we would come to the city and I was a kid, I would always sit in the back. And when you're in 290 and you're heading west, after going, you know, going to the city, And coming back home, I would sit in the back window
mm-hmm.
and stare at the buildings until they disappeared mm-hmm. when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I always used to think to my mom, just like, man, it's so weird how, like, it just seems like we're going this way, but it seems like everything is that way. So by the time
all the excitement was that way.
Yes.
Hey, Louis Green.
Yes. So that's kind of...
I love that story. So you were a suburban kid who got bit by the house music bug in, like, little increments.
Yep.
And then eventually... That you, Immaculate's one of your buds in high school.
Mm-hmm.
He's already DJing, it sounds like.
Emac's already DJing.
Yeah.
He's already DJing. I have this grandiose idea of, like, get these people to this party.
So you were a promoter. That was 1990.
Yeah.
When you did that.
Yeah, 1991. I think it's
okay.
90. It's so hard to read. It's like probably 91 when I think back to it. Had 91.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so that's what happened. And I remember calling... 45 people, and by the time I got to maybe 20, 21,
yeah,
the conversation, it went from hey, what's going on, Lori, how are you,
uh-huh.
hey, just wanna, so are you really having a party? In the
sounds like a movie script.
Yeah. In the beginning it was like, hey, Lori, what's going on, I just want to let you know that you know, I'm gonna have some people over this weekend or mm-hmm. whatever, right? And by 2021 it's just like, hey, yeah, are you having a party, is that serious? Like, yeah, who told you that, you know, because I love time.
Yeah You're, hey, Linderette. Yes, well, that's an amazing story. So now let's take the leap to when did this promoter start doing music himself?
Okay, well, okay, so we'll just start there. I mean, we'll continue there now. So here was one of the conditions of doing that party.
Yeah.
I had to write a business plan.
To whom?
For my mom.
I was going to ask, how did your parents feel about this 500-person party in their property?
So I left that part of it out.
Yes.
I just
did
said...
Did she know it was happening?
So I said, Mom, I think that I can... I want to do this party at her house. And first I had to do this, like, little, like... kind of pre-birthday party for my sister.
Yes.
That was like, get her warmed up. And I think it really was just like, okay, let me just, maybe he'll forget about this thing.
Yes.
Let him do this. And then she's like, okay, if you really want to do this, you got to write a business plan. And if you make any money, you have to agree to give your sister spending money for her first.
Wow.
Her trip, her senior trip to Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. So later, years later, my mom told me that she's like, I'm going to let him do this. I mean, I'm going to make him do this mm-hmm. party because, I mean, make him do this business plan because I know there's no way this kid is ever going to write a business plan until I wrote it.
And you wrote a business
plan. I wrote a business plan. I didn't know a business plan. I wrote everything. And she's like, and she says, I can't believe it. It was so detailed all the way down to the security, how everything was going to work. And she told me, she's like, I got to let this kid throw this party. So throw the party. my sister... goes to Mexico, give my sister $500.
Wow.
600
people. So you made some money.
Yeah, I didn't even care about the money.
Wait, so people paid to get into your house party?
Yeah, $5. Yep.
Just $5 a piece.
$5, there's 600 people there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So gave my sister $500. Yeah. She goes to Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, has time of life, comes back, and decides she wants to travel. Mm. And she goes 20 plus years of travel and hospitality.
Okay.
By convincing that company that took her on that trip to hire her on as the youngest student organizer. So that's how her travel and hospitality career started.
And is that, I'm sure there's a connection to what?
So for me.
Mi casa, su casa.
Yeah, there is a connection.
So
for me, of course, I keep throwing parties.
Yeah.
And along the way, I start to discover.
Where were you throwing these parties?
It was different places. So
two parties
at my house. First one was like massive. The second one, it was like by 9 o'clock, there was like 300 people there and my neighbors started to freak out.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So then we started going on a series of finding spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And my job was to create a justifiable story as to why we should be able to.
To whom?
To do a party. To whomever, the person who was leasing the space.
So when you say we, who was your partner?
So we were called Lamp Squad.
Lamp Squad, okay.
And the reason it was Lamp Squad was because in the suburbs, everyone comes out early and goes to bed early. And we were the only ones, because we used to go to Chicago all the time.
Right.
We wouldn't go out till 1 or 2 o'clock. And so all our friends would be like, damn, Lamp Squad. I'd just be lamping.
So lamping as in?
Lamping is like relaxing.
Oh, yeah,
like, lamping. Think about how a lamp does. You know, just sits there.
I was thinking about like the street lamp. Like, you know, you're out after. Anyway, okay.
Yeah.
Lamping.
Lamping, like you sit in a lamp and a lamp does not do anything. It just chills, right?
Just chilling. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so I started, we started all types of stories.
Yeah.
One story was before I had, just not even thinking about DJing, one of the main DJs that we had besides Immaculate,
mm-hmm.
His name is DJ Beauty, and I told a guy that, hey, you know what, we have a DJ and mm-hmm. he travels around the world, and we have this this weekend he's coming back into town, and mm-hmm. what he does, he has this dedicated following of loyal fans that want to hear all his new music.
Okay.
So we just need the space for this private event, you know, will you let us have it? And so that was like one
for free.
No, $5.
Oh no, I'm saying, did you get the space?
No, we had to pay for it.
You had to pay for it.
It was
okay.
Cheap. It was cheap.
Okay.
Did that, and like one of the next ones, the next biggest ones was I told a guy, which was true.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that we were talking about was mm-hmm. pretty true, right? We were going to shoot a music
okay.
video,
mm-hmm.
and we wanted the guy, or we needed the space to shoot the music video. We had a bunch of people coming, and I remember even asking the guy, hey, man, would you like to be in the video? And he was like, no, I don't want to be in the video.
Oh, okay.
That's the guy said, right?
Yeah.
So, series of those things, and then got to, like, a barn party. Became massive.
Yeah.
And we raised a bunch of money, and we were able to move to the city.
Yeah.
And that's how I got to the city.
So you moved to the city. Was that your goal all along?
Yeah. Yes.
Like you wanted to get to that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was kind of one of those things where once that first party happened and then we were, you know, throwing parties,
mm-hmm.
it just was like, oh, we can move to the city.
Okay.
Let's go. Because we were always going anyway.
Now, when you came to the city, where were you going?
When I was going to the city.
Yeah.
It's interesting when you used to talk about the punk.
Yeah.
Medusa's.
Of course, yeah.
That's Medusa's.
So you were going there like in the 80s then, no?
No, I was going there in the 90s.
Was Medusa still open? Yeah, I guess it was.
Yeah.
When did it close?
Probably 94.
Yeah, early 90s. Yeah, I would imagine. Yeah.
So, but Medusa's is, I give credit to Medusa's for how, in producing any type of event,
uh-huh.
What you want in the very end
mm-hmm.
and what it was. When I went to Medusa's, it never felt like it closed.
Yeah,
it
that's
just,
right. I
it just,
going
the lights night. Came on and you had to go.
You had to go. Yeah, I do remember it. Now that I had that thought, I was thinking about when I went there. I left Chicago and I came back. Anyway, it was in the early 90s and I went to Medusa's again. But it was, I remember when Medusa had his first club. It was called 161 West Harrison.
Okay.
It was way before your time, but he was friends with Frankie Knuckles.
Yeah.
You know, and Frankie was his DJ at 161 Harrison.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a whole story with Medusa.
Dave, Dave's from Elgin, and years later, I met him, and we became really, really good friends.
Yeah.
And because I always told him how much, like, that club inspired me.
It was great.
And probably, man, it had been a few weeks before he died. He gave me his gospel CD because his grandmother was like a neighbor of
uh-huh.
some of my cousins or something like that. So he wanted to give me this gospel CD, and it was pretty cool.
That's great. And often people don't know those connections. You know, so we're in the 40 years of house music, and I want to ask you what that means to you. But often, you know, we talk about house music culture and versus the house music genre.
Mm-hmm.
There's always stories about where did it start, who started this, that, and the other. And I think the confusion is that we had this term house music before we had any records that were called house music. The term was first,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yep.
And it was like these songs, there were all kinds of songs that fit under that umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, folks like Jip B and others were like, no, let's make a house music song.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that
we can put in the crate that's actually ours.
Yeah.
But, I want to talk more. I'm telling you, time flies when we're doing this show. Linda Red, thanks for tuning in. I wanted to ask you about, so the first party, so when was you got some turntables? What happened?
No, okay, well, so along the way, after I threw mm-hmm. that first party, so I'm throwing more parties, along the way I started to disagree with the order of songs as a DJ.
Oh, okay.
because two things that for
who
me
was
in the
spinning for you.
It was DJ Beauty. Okay. The first song, her first party was Immaculate and Beauty.
Okay.
Right. Then it became DJ Beauty for the most part. He was in our crew. Eric was a little bit younger.
Okay.
And then I started to disagree with the order of songs, so I started to try it. In the summer of 94, I was able to successfully sync the beats to Energy Flash, Joey Beltran.
And it
makes sense because if you think I was one of Medusa's, right?
Like, it makes sense.
Energy Flash was like, oh my goodness, right? So I just always remember it was like, doo, 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 doo. I got it.
Were you excited? There's nothing like it.
I always, to this day, tell people, you have got to try to DJ. Because there is,
it's a high.
Oh my God, I still remember that feeling. I'll never forget that. It's
great. You know what I also tell folks, like, I wish we did more of this. I don't know that I would do it anymore, but when I was DJing in the early 80s, everything was about the battle. Like, literally every party you went to, almost every party, there was a battle. Mm-hmm. And there were people evaluating your skills. Mm. Like, I don't know how well that would go over now, because
I missed that part of it.
It was nerve-wracking.
Yeah, I missed that whole part of that. And partly because my style of DJing, like, internally, it's about, for the most part, making people move to music that they don't even know.
Right.
They don't. So that's like the DNA. It's almost, it almost feels like cheating. I have to like kind of like rewire the way that I think about it. Even like mixes. Like I kind of came up with DJs who would practice mixes, like combinations of song.
Yeah.
And it's weird because for so many years, like you just would not hear me play the same two songs together.
Right.
Just because, I don't know, it's just not how I was wired, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And just philosophically as a DJ, I thought of it more like having the type of skill where regardless of what direction that you wanted to go, that you just understood the music enough that you could decide to go that direction. That was the goal, to be able to go whatever direction that you want to go when you want to go there, while understanding that your audience, you're taking them on a ride,
right?
So
you want them to come with you.
Yes, exactly. So if you're going to go off road,
you better be confident in your direction
or know how much time that you're going to be spending. Right, exactly. Yes.
I love that. I think it's important to be philosophical with your approach. I think people can tell the difference, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So there is a part of it when I think about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, but while I'm DJing, I had to create this DJ game that I play with myself, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a forecaster. So early on, I used to think about how do you sustain the highest level for the longest period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought about, like, okay, you know, you get that experience, and when you have this great set, or what people perceive as a great set, and they're like, man, how'd you do it or whatnot, right? So then I, like, forecasted, like, you know, huge stage, audience of people, magazines, everyone, how did you do it? And I was thinking about that, and then I thought about the exact opposite. Huge stage, and then it's like, man, you were terrible. Like, how did you do it? Like, what happened to you, right?
Uh-huh.
So I really thought about both of those, and then I started to think about, well, what, you know, what response, what really is it when you peel it all back? And what I really realized is, it's not about that. It's just about how much I love the music. So then it was like, okay, well, how do I maintain that?
Mm-hmm.
So I created this DJ game, which is like, you basically get think about three things.
Okay.
One,
DJ game.
Yes. So one is how much you love the song that you just played. So I'll just be like, oh my God, I love that song.
Yeah.
Number two is how much I love the song that I am playing. It's okay. Like, oh my God, this song, I love this song. This song is so dope. Oh my God, right? Number three is how much I love the song that I'm about to play.
Oh, okay.
So what people are getting 100% of the time.
I love that.
Is how much I love the music. Yeah. And whether it's a flop or whether it's like, you know, the second coming of Jesus, it's like the same answer.
Yes.
It's just, I can't tell you that. It's just, I can just tell you how much I love the music.
That, and so that works. So here's what I hear you're saying is you have to be invested in your own craft, but you also have to be invested in your soul. Like, if this is something that you feel is truly right. And that, I wonder, I'm like trying to calibrate that with what you think people want to hear.
So that's a whole nother thing. Yeah. Thing is, so there's an argument on both of those sides, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so people, if you're as a fan, you want to hear your cuts.
Of course.
I mean, I used to love to dance. And yeah. I used to be one in the middle of the dance floor hoping that they play XYZ.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but then the other, on the other side of that is, well, I understand that. However, if you are in the position to have the skill to be able to select music and present it, everyone's not in that. It's your job to push the envelope in the way that you believe that you need to push it.
Yeah.
However, depending how you came up and what it is that pays your own soul.
I love it.
Some of my friends are like completely sparked by the crowd interaction.
Yeah.
And I think depending on what kind of music you play, when you came up,
or
just your personality in general, it may be that, right? But my problem with that is, A, that can be very boring because if I have this collection of music and I can always just make you, I don't know how that I can't, it's a short kind of, it's short lived.
I get it. Yeah.
For me, it's
kind of like a superficial high. Like,
exactly.
It's I get that.
And again, though, again, there's so many arguments on the side. So you do you and I don't ever, whatever DJ feels that way. That's cool. I'm just, for me, I'm curious to see what it's like to become one with the music.
Every time
that I play, it's this journey to that possibility, which only probably happens 1% of the time.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. Hey, so one of the things that I wanted to mention was DJ Emmanuel. Hey, what's up? He's saying hey to both of us.
Oh, I'll see Emmanuel 2 days. Yes. Friday. I'll see you then.
DJ Emmanuel, call me.
Yes. He's so sick.
He knows what I'm talking about.
Oh, speaking of battles, actually, the last battle that I was in was with John Simmons and Emmanuel, and Emmanuel kills it, of course.
Oh, yeah, he's great. We used to actually do a, we had a residency together at this club downtown for, man, how long ago was that, Emmanuel?
That spy bar before, years. Like, it had, years.
Yeah.
Well, mine was long, so yours had to been long.
It was in the, like, early, mid-90s, was place called, I can't even remember the name of it. Emmanuel, you'll have to remind me, but me, him, and Boo Williams and his other cat. Anyway, we had a great time. So I wanted to talk a little bit about where we had an engagement, and I was like, I don't know that we've ever, like, talked before, and it was at Burning Man.
Yeah.
And they were like, Julius and Matthew. I was like, oh, that's great. I don't know if we ever, like, hung out with him. And so that was quite an experience.
It was a crazy experience.
And that's when I said, this is a cool guy. Because we were having a hell of a time with another DJ who was, you know, having his own energy.
Moment, yeah.
He was having a moment. And I'm there with two other DJs, my good girls, DJ Lady D and VD Girl. And we'd been waiting for 3 days to play music.
Yeah.
And when it was finally time to play, because we were leaving the next day, the person who was, you know, managing,
responsible for all of the sound being
all
there.
All of the sound being there says, well, you can't play now because I'm playing.
And
it was really kind of a tough situation because, I mean, we didn't know, like, sort of what to do. And, you know, Lady D, she's much more direct than I am. And I'm trying to sort of figure out how to, like, be diplomatic about it. She's about to kind of snap and... So you came in and you sort of handled that situation for us. And I was like, I don't know. I think it's more than a man thing. I think that he's got some skills that are very valuable in this field. Do you remember that?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's so I think maybe this is, I don't know, I think it's by nature.
Yes.
I'm cautious.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so I tend to really kind of understand the possibilities of what people may be going through at certain times.
Sure.
And so I can like really kind of see these things, all the things that can happen.
Yeah.
And then and recognize certain ways that people may need to mm-hmm. be either addressed, talked to, and sometimes it's more harsh than others or whatnot.
Yeah. But,
and so I sensed everything that was happening, and I knew everything that was on the line.
Yeah.
And as a DJ, you guys came out to the desert,
right?
And not really knowing what was going to happen.
Absolutely.
Under really incredibly crazy conditions.
Burning Man is always crazy. Not just last year. Even that year was crazy. Like the dust storms, and it's crazy.
And all of that. And then for me, like thinking back to myself,
mm-hmm.
so I'm already the type of person who, when it comes to DJing, if I'm hungry,
yes,
but then the tables are open,
yes,
I'm gonna play.
Yeah,
I won't. I'll eat later.
Yeah,
if there's no
absolutely.
More food, no problem, I'll just keep playing, right?
Right.
So I understood, I could only imagine, I was thinking like, okay, this is what's supposed to happen. We have this amazing project.
Yeah.
There's nothing more disheartening than missing a game. That's
yes,
period.
Absolutely.
But to have to be under the conditions that we were under,
uh-huh.
and then go all out there and miss, so for me, it's just like, without even thinking about it all, I already sensed it all.
Yeah.
And so it was just, I had already had a lot of conversations with
Was responsive to you.
Yes, because I had already understood mm-hmm. in the conversations and asking my own questions of how everything
mm-hmm.
would work.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is I like to really understand why people, like kind of the do that they believe that they should have and why.
Yeah.
And I tend to lend credibility to
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a question in our conversation. And so that was what's most important in that situation, was to be able to just have a conversation where and allow someone to vent
mm-hmm.
and then to present a situation to where I thought it was like highest probability that the only conclusion that he's going to come to is that to get his shit there, to get everything there the way that it's supposed to be there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But yeah, and so...
Yeah.
It's a natural thing, especially after years and years of producing events.
I
managed hip-hop, a hip-hop group back in the 90s in the golden age of hip-era hip-hop
mm-hmm.
with 10 MCs, and all of them thought that they were going to be the... I mean, so...
Yeah, you know how to deal with personality.
Yes.
So how... It sounds like that has helped you, help move your career in a few different ways. So you would do production... We're already 10 minutes out and we're going to be done. So I want to get to a couple things.
Yeah, sure.
I do want to talk about the partnership that you have to establish an agency or an entity that helps people travel, and you combine music and art. And talk about Mi Casa Su Casa.
So, very quickly, that one event where my sister went to, that one going to Mexico, she goes 20 years of travel hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
I produce the one party along the way, start to disc the order, become a DJ, get hooked. She goes 20 years of travel and hospitality.
Yeah.
I go 20 years of DJing and event production.
Yeah.
2009, we produced one event in Playa del Carmen, Mexico.
Yes.
After searching for different destinations. And then... that experience in 2009 was described as a magical experience.
Yeah.
So we had merged those two things together, and that one event evolved into a travel and music community where now we produce in Costa Rica, Cuba, U.S., Mexico.
Right.
Whereas last October was our 15-year anniversary.
Wow.
For,
that's amazing.
It is crazy. And this October, our sweet 16 is in Cuba.
Is that in Cuba? I know. I was trying to sign up. They're like, use a wait list.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
so I was like, wow, this is really popular stuff. So this is, that's, congratulations.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, along the over the years, and I'm sure that you've had this so many times through events that you've produced or hosted, where someone says, hey, Lori, I'm going to XYZ city. Mm-hmm. Hey, do you know someone there?
Absolutely.
Either that one, or someone comes back and says, you know, hey, Lori, oh, you're like, how are you? Oh, I'm doing good. Oh, man, we just got back from XYZ. And man, you know, you should go check that out because they got this DJ or so that was already happening.
Yeah.
I was already traveling to the Winter Music Conference for like 18 years straight.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw why it got fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
And then essentially extracted everything that made that special, but at the same time, the elements where people were frustrated and put that into the event with the foundation of a different event that we created, which was 3 Degrees, which was all about like-minded individuals knowing each other within three people. So that was the... I learned what happens when people discover positive commonalities.
Nice.
And so Mikasa Holiday essentially was that foundation, but creating an environment where, an exotic environment where those people could come together.
I love it. And so that's, you've been doing that for 15 years now.
It's been 16 this year.
16 years. And is Cuba your next event?
Yeah, yeah, and we've been taking people to Cuba for, this is the 9th year.
Well, I want to get down with one of these. So you have to let me know when you have some space.
Yes, yes.
So that I can experience that. It sounds lovely. It sounds really cool. I hadn't seen anything. I mean, I knew that you did that. But I really did my little research, and I'm like, okay, well, how can I want to go on one of these expeditions. How big are they? Are they like thousands, hundreds? Who's there?
Well, it depends. Mm-hmm. I mean, the goal was, it was never supposed to be this massive music festival. However, the way that we built it was that if we wanted to have a component be a massive music festival act, a part of it, we could do that without changing or jeopardizing the integrity of the event, right? So it's built that way.
Yeah.
But the idea was, what was the number that could give you the type of energy of 15,000-20,000 people?
Yeah.
But be intimate enough that you don't feel like a number.
Right.
And the number that we kind of came up with is 1,500 is that, right?
Okay.
But, so anything between 500 and 1,500 is kind of where...
That's where your window is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because we know, because not everybody wants to be... We've already kind of been there, done that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But the quality, but be able to have access to that energy, that's
and
what the
And people
goal is.
Come and do people... how does that work? So...
Yeah, so like, what happens is... generally, people will put together a travel package.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So it's easy with multiple options for your different style.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people are all-inclusive people. Some people are boutique. Some people are kind of whatever. Right?
Wow.
So have that there. And then we'll integrate music and culture and history into it. And so Cuba is extraordinary because you get all of that.
Yeah.
Right? Into one very seamless flow where you just, it's like the most extraordinary
It sounds like great
kind
it's
of
great
adventure
experience.
That you could go on it's
so
pretty
is it,
seamless.
Is it like Burning Man where there's people who go to every single one, or there are people who is their first time, or sort of like who's
it's
all of that?
So Mexico was different
because
it was heavy music events and then kind of culture second.
Yeah.
Cuba is culture first, and then the music is integrated into it within the community of Cuba with sprinkles of artists through the flow. And but it's almost like, like one day you would be going to the mountains.
Yeah.
And then, then later that night, you're going to be in the club. Right?
I love it.
So it's like culture from two different aspects.
I love it. That is so awesome. Congrats on that.
Thank you.
So we are, you're going to be at the, in Miami, no?
Coming up? I'm going to be in Miami. But Friday I'm going to be in Chicago, which is great.
What's happening Friday?
I play this Friday with Steve Maestro,
yeah,
and Emmanuel,
okay,
for the Art Loft 1 year anniversary, but it's not at the Art Loft,
okay.
So if you're on Facebook, look for Steve Maestro,
Steve
Just
Maestro.
My Thinker,
awesome.
Or Emmanuel, yes.
All right, that sounds great. And
in Miami, yes, I will be there.
I'm going to come check you out, I think. What day are you playing?
Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, okay, I'll definitely see you, because I'm going to be in Naples. But I'm going to fly into Miami, spend a couple days there, then go over to Naples. We have family there in the spring break, so we got a 15-year-old. You all know how it is with CPS. You got to get there. Yes, that's what's up. Mortimer Seed. Okay, that's your boy, Steve.
Oh, nice. Steve.
Thanks for checking us out.
Steve. Oh, man. That's all right. I'm a fan first. I'm a fan of
that's
Steve,
right.
And
Me
Emmanuel.
Too. Me
I'm
too.
I'm a fan, so I'm honored to play with those guys.
We love you. So, okay, so you'd be in Miami. Now we are 40 years of house music. What I like to say is that sort of the 40 years of house music genre, you know, that when we think about, like, when those first records came out in 1984, and I was there for all of that, that happened 40 years ago. Now, you were in third grade or so.
Yeah, around there. 12 years old. 12.
But you were listening to, you had caught the fever by then.
Yeah.
What do you think about what when you think of 40 years of house music? What comes to mind?
What comes to mind? Gosh, there's so many things that come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
But what comes to mind? 40 years of house music.
Yeah.
I guess it would be. The first word is evolution.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very, kind of keen on
mm-hmm.
what happens when there's, you described it earlier as people referring as house music, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, all house music, and then there's the actual house music,
mm-hmm.
and then the evolution of what happens for those who were a part of that culture first.
Yeah.
And then when it blew up,
mm-hmm.
and then how that all works.
Yes.
How, it, like, the different opinions
uh-huh.
of like, wait a minute, I was there first during this
yes.
point. And then who has the credibility to be able to speak about
yeah.
it, right? So
I love it.
That happens, and it's very...
I love the way you just framed that. Who has the credibility to speak about that whole continuum? Because it really is that, I mean, that's why we have these debates. It's kind of like this, when did it start? How did it start? Who named it? You know, and I feel like I'm very clear. So
I'll say
I
this.
Like
I think the
that.
Short answer is everybody.
Hey, Craig. Yeah, no, I agree. Everybody did. And that's why there's confusion around it, is because we all contributed.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I'll tell you, the most interesting thing to me
yeah.
is I always wonder, like, with South Africa,
yes,
being kind of 30 years behind in from
uh-huh.
from just from a social construct,
yeah,
they have an opportunity to not go through some of those things,
yeah.
And I'm very interested
yeah.
to see how that
where they're jumping in while it's fully baked,
yeah.
So you know when you're in the kitchen and the ingredients are coming together, you know that's very different than somebody handing you a cake and say you make a better cake.
Right,
it's,
but
here's
I'm,
the cake.
But
know?
I'm thinking in terms of, so this has already happened, but then
yeah.
the opinions of how that
happened,
and can you skip some of
yeah
that infighting
yeah.
or you know?
I think so, and I hate to think of it as infighting. I think that you know I've got lots of opinions about why that happens, but I think it's just that people want to set the record straight about you know there's a lot of ego attached to that. Like if I feel
rightfully so. I mean,
yeah,
you put
you work towards whatever it was as a DJ, as a producer, as a promoter, you know, as a sound engineer, as a singer. All of those people have opinions about
yeah.
like what matters and who counts and all that. And I think we just got to be more loving and open so that everybody counts.
Yeah,
you know?
I think if the message is everybody counts.
Yeah.
And then I think it's just important to
mm-hmm.
either
right.
continually contribute.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Continually just contribute.
Right.
And
right.
if you're not currently contributing, then it's all good.
Right.
Then just keep on, you know, keep putting positive energy in the air.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So you guys, thank you for hanging with us. DJ Emmanuel, thanks for reminding me. The name of the club was Trade and Flavor. And it's like an architecture place now. But anyway, it was on Wabash. Thank you for tuning in. Julius, thank you for being here. I told you this goes fast.
It went very
so
fast.
So we didn't get to talk about your music.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Listen, you can find him on Tracksource. You got a Bandcamp page.
Yeah, Bandcamp. Or Spotify.
Spotify. All that.
Yeah.
You know, support these artists. Support this guy. He's the best. He's the coolest. I have witnessed it firsthand. He resolves conflicts very easily. And one day he'll invite me to Cuba. So I don't know. I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
There you go. It's announced to the world.
Yes. I have claimed it. All right, Linda Red. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Thanks for everyone for listening out there. And you've been listening.
Thanks for listening to the Vintage House Show podcast. Please subscribe and share. And check us out live, WNUR 89.3 FM, Wednesdays at 10 o'clock.